My home group is the Sunrise Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. We meet in Studio City, California. My sobriety date is June the 14th, 1993, and my sponsor's name is a guy named Bob D. from Las Vegas, Nevada. Those are things I didn't have when I got here, and they're real important to me. If you're new, I invite you to get a few of those things. They've proved to have been good for me. I want to welcome you home if you're new tonight. I want to welcome you home to Alcoholics Anonymous. I want to welcome you home to recovery. I want to welcome you home to a new way of life or a design for living. And I want to welcome you home to magic. Magic. Yes. When I was new, I want to share with you one of the first things I heard in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. It was my first attempt at recovery in a place called the Valley Club in Reseda, California. And this guy got up to the podium. He had plaids on that didn't match. He had a heavy New York accent from Brooklyn. And he said, this is what he said. I heard him. He said, "I'd like to talk to the newcomer tonight and tell you that you never have to take a drink or a drug the rest of your life if you don't want to, and even if you want to, one day at a time." And I went, wow. Even if, I don't know about you, but I know how I drink. And how I drink is even when I'm not drinking and I don't want to drink, I could use a damn drink. And this guy's saying I don't have to do it. So it was news to me. And if you're new tonight, you're going to, you know, people here are really happy, peppy, and smiley, and clean, and bright. And it's just wonderful, isn't it? And they're laughing. And when I was new, there was nothing funny about what I was going through. And you were always saying, welcome back and welcome home. And I, you know, it sounded so pathetic and canned and insincere, trite. And I'm telling you, if you're new tonight, we really mean it. We really mean welcome home. And I'll tell you why. I am sober today through God's grace and because of the love of other alcoholics. And I have found that what happens here is magic. My sponsor calls this a ringside seat to the greatest show on earth. Ringside seat to the greatest show on earth. To watch people recover. And you allow us that vehicle. You are that vehicle from which we can be relieved of the bondage of self and watch hookers and deadbeat dads and junkies and thieves turn into working class citizens, moms and dads and people who help each other. And I want to welcome you home. I really, really mean that. I love being in New York. I get out of the bus and my hair stands up and I just feel like I've been on speed or something, tweaking, you know, just a great feeling. Without the come down, of course. The backside's never good. And I have alcoholism. I want to thank my friend Vinny and his father for coming out tonight and driving with me and hosting me all week. And if you're new, I didn't bargain for this. I didn't bargain to have friends across the country. I didn't bargain to be part of people's families. I came here so I could put the bottle down and go one more day, and I got overpaid here. And I'm here to tell you that's been my experience. But I have alcoholism. I don't have alcoholism. And you talked about alcoholism. You talked about it. You talked about everything getting in the way of alcohol, of recovery, about the job, the wife, the car, the things that I come to AA on my knees with nothing, no life. And I stay here a while and I get a job and start making some money. I buy a car. I get her or him. And things start rolling along, and all of a sudden, those things seem more important than Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't have time anymore, you see? And eventually, what happens is what always happens. It's just like these lights that are hanging from a chain. All those little chains, they signify money, and they signify property, and jobs, and people, and relationships. And that top one's recovery, and when that sucker breaks, they all come tumbling down. And it must come first. But I have alcoholism. I don't know when, where, how, or why I got it. And I hear a lot of people in meetings go on and on about how their mother had it, their father had it, their brother had it, their cousin. And it really doesn't matter. When I was new at the Valley Club, an old-timer grabbed me and said, "Are you alcoholic?" And I said, "Yes." He said, "Do you want to live or do you want to die?" And I heard a guy say it from the South best, because people from the South say it best. They talk better than all of us. They're cute. And this old boy said, he said, "It don't matter how the mule got in the ditch, boy, let's just get him out." Keeping it simple, man. Keeping it simple. But I don't know where I got it, but I don't know about you, but I've always been a little weird. Anybody else weird? And the rest of you liars. Or we'll call you eccentrics. I've always been a little busy in my mind. I have a very, very fast mind. I don't know about you. I think a lot. Anybody else? And I'm just a... I, I've always been restless, irritable, and discontent from a young age. And when I heard that, didn't really understand. My sponsor's really good at defining things, and I need him sometimes. And restless has come to me, what it means to me is it means I don't know where I belong. You know, I just don't know where I fit. I'm like a dog on the freeway, there's nowhere to go. And I'm irritable because everything pisses me off. I'm highly agitated. If I go to the market and I go to that express line, I'm counting your stuff, right? And I am discontent because all my life, everything I've ever achieved, acquired, been given, once I get it that I need it, it'll make me all right. Once I get it, right after I get it, the shine of it wears off and it ain't enough. And I live my life like this. I grew up in a small town outside of Fresno called Tulare. It's a farming community that you can smell before you get to, one of those places. I'm the oldest of three. My mom and dad were very poor growing up. My father worked in the fields as a farm laborer as a child, which I was terrified and embarrassed of. And I think I didn't ever even acknowledge that till I did a four-step in Alcoholics Anonymous, because it makes me dirty. My father educated himself. My mother educated herself. And they have gave me and my sisters every opportunity in life they did not have, and it wasn't enough for me. I have a sense of entitlement. I have a sense that you owe me. And I'm the oldest of three. I'm a Mexican kid growing up in a neighborhood that's not Mexican. I hated being Mexican growing up. I couldn't stand it. I was waiting the day they'd come out with like a race change operation or something, right? Because I think I know stuff here. If I'd have been born in New York City, maybe Irish, I'd have turned out different, right? But looking around you, I see I was wrong about that. And, I'm a wound up little ball of nerves is what I am growing up. And I was going to a junior high school, and I remember I was hanging out with these kids. I wasn't good in sports. I wasn't social. I wasn't a jock. And if you're like that, you'll hang out with an elite crowd called stoners. Some of you know those guys. And I'm hanging out with stoners and being cool. I didn't know why they called the stoners. I am pathetic. It's the story of my life. I was thrown out of junior high school for having a roach clip I had never even used. I didn't know how to use it. And the truth. And while at that junior high school, something happened to me, something that was just another series of events. But I went to a little dance that they would have on Friday afternoons where they would play records and everybody would dance in the cafeteria. And every week I was afraid to ask people to dance. I always plotted and planned and could never find the nerve to do it. And I would walk out of that room every week, and I would feel something in my gut that I would come to know very well throughout my life. And it was a feeling. If you're new tonight, I want to describe the feeling, and I want to tell you a little precursor first. We speak a different language here in Alcoholics Anonymous. You're going to notice that about us. We talk funny. We say stuff like obsessions of the mind and allergy of the body. We use funny terms that I don't use on the street. I never once went up to a bartender or a dealer and said, hit me with a double, I'm feeling low self-esteem, man. You know, I have a lot of resentment. No, I'm pissed, really. But there was a line that was read when I was new in Alcoholics Anonymous at one of my first meetings, that when you read the line, I did not require a dictionary, a sponsor, or a home group to define. And the line went like this: pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. Know that one. And I felt that feeling walking out that door as a 13-year-old kid, afraid and alone, and afraid that you'll know that, what a coward I am and a wimp I am, and I hated myself for it, and I can't let you know it. And I had that feeling of pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. When I'm 13 and a half, I'm at a wedding, they're serving booze there. There's a live band there. There's girls from school my age there, and I'm not an idiot. I take a drink. I watch my uncles come over. When they came over and they didn't smell like a man smells, without liquor on them, they weren't friendly. But if they came over on liquor, they were lit up. Their faces were bright. And I knew that booze would do something for me, not knowing what it would do to me. And I took a few drinks. And I took a few more drinks of something called cold duck at a wedding. Tells you economically where I come from. And I remember not liking the flavor, but I remember liking the effect. And what the effect was for me was suddenly everything was okay. Suddenly the hole in my gut filled up, and suddenly I was all right. And suddenly, it was like a nerd remover, my friend says. I feel like a drink, I take a drink, and you're the nerd. I take another drink, and you should be pretty lucky that I'm even here. And if you live locked up in your mind like I do, and you take a drink and that happens, it's a good deal. And I felt alive and awake and a part of, and I felt like everybody else felt. I felt like you looked. And my sponsor says that alcohol has effectively relieved me of the bondage of self. And the fears drop and the curtain comes down and I can come out and be with you and be a part of, and I'm all right. And I got really drunk that night. I got really sick and I couldn't wait to drink again. I was too young to buy liquor, but I drank every chance I got. And the first time I was arrested at 15 and a half, minor under the influence, minor in possession of alcohol, and was sentenced to Alcoholics Anonymous at 15 and a half on a court card. Young kid going to an AA meeting, not knowing what I was doing there, not knowing a thing about it, walking in the door, and a guy said, "Hi, I'm Ringo, I'm an alcoholic," and I'm like, "Dude, shh, keep it down, man. Someone might see me or something, you know?" And I walked in the room, and I looked around the room, and there was about 15 people in the room, and the furniture was awful. It was didn't match. The people looked worse. What I saw at 15 was a bunch of old people with a coffee cup in each hand and two cigarettes hanging out of their mouth. In between puffs, they cursed. It looked like a hayride for inbreds is what it looked like. And some of the newcomers are relating, going, "Yeah, that's what it looks like. Yeah." And I sat there, and this lady started to share, and she told this awful blow-by-blow story. Heroin addict, drug addict, alcoholic, prostitute, you name it, she did it. I was embarrassed for her, really. And she started to talk about why she was there, and she was paroled recently and was there to give back to the ANA, whatever that was. And she talked about being in a penitentiary for what she had done was this. She had got home from work one night, drank some vodka, and put her two-year-old son in the bathtub, forgot he was there, and he drowned. And I did that. I went, "Oh, my God. They're worse than they look." And as I sat there, the worst thing that happens to people like me happened. I started to think. The Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous says that the main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than in his body, which in plain English simply means this. This doesn't work very well. I have a mind that rationalizes and justifies just about anything. I could steal from you and convince myself you owe me money. You have one of those kind of minds? I have a mind that offers me solutions that are worse than my problem. Anybody relate? How about this one? I was too drunk to walk, so I... Yes, that's the mind. And I'm also equipped with another baffling feature in my mind, and that is that I have a voice in my head. And I don't know if anybody in this room has the voice in their head or not. But if you are wondering, it is the voice that just said, "What voice?" That's the voice. And the voice started talking. And this is what the voice said. "Dude, you're not alcoholic. Alcohol is not your problem," which was the truth. "Your problem is you got caught." And how do you tell a 15-year-old dirty little Mexican kid that doesn't mix well, who goes to a keg party, and I can sing in bands, and I can talk to cheerleaders and dance and laugh, and how do you tell me there's something wrong with that? I can't do that without booze. And my mind clicked and said, you know what? The answer is to do things that are more concealable. And I started smoking non-addictive marijuana. And taking those little pills with the X's on them. Remember those? You take like four, wash your car six times the same day. Get a little busy. And I love that, the window thing, you know. I remember I could hear ants with gas two blocks away. You know, somebody's relating to that. And I started doing all these combinations and along with my drinking. And I'm not going to apologize for that. I know speakers like to say outside issue. I'm not going to apologize for that stuff at all in an AA podium. I'm an alcoholic of the hopeless variety, and alcoholics of the hopeless variety that are my age, where I grew up, did a lot of other things along with alcohol. My alcoholism has done some twists and turns in the road where I've didn't even know what I was doing for a while and thought I was something else other than alcoholic. I've had those experiences, and I am really grateful for the people that stood at podiums like this and shared those in a way where I could feel a part of an Alcoholics Anonymous. The Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous says that these allergic types can never safely use alcohol in any form at all. And for guys like me, anything that scratches the itch is a form at all. Now, I won't get into details on that stuff. I didn't know why I came here. I didn't know what I was when I got to you. And I read the beautiful Big Book, Alcoholics Anonymous, and I discovered some guys in the 30s of the Midwest, of all places, wrote a book about me. And they knew all about me, knew how I'd respond, knew how I'd act. I'll tell you, when I was new, I went to a meeting and I identified the meeting. I shared and I said my name, and I'm an alcoholic and right? You've heard that. And a nice old dude grabbed me and he said, "Young man, you can share like that if you'd like here in AA, but you'll have to put in the basket twice." And I stopped that crap in a hurry. So, just alcoholic, that's all I am. Combinations are escalating. My girlfriend's pregnant at 18. I marry, I do the right thing. I married my girlfriend. I go back to school. I'm working full time, and I buy a house at 19 years old in that little town. And I got a daughter and a wife, and it looks good on the outside, but I have alcoholism, and it doesn't care. Doesn't care how much I love my daughter, how much I treasure her, how much I like being her dad. I drink badly. My wife leaves, and within 3 years, and now the governor's gone, and I can drink with abandon, and I'm sick, and I'm out. I'm insane. Worked for a company back then called Budweiser, and they sent me to my first rehab, and I'll tell you about rehabs for me. Rehabs for me enable me to do one thing, and that's learn more stuff about how to get loaded. That's just my mind. I left that rehab on a Friday night, 30 days sober, nothing in my system, and within 4 hours, I was in a liquor store drinking again. 4 months later, I'm on my mother's couch, and I'm homeless. I can't work, and I'm stealing from my parents to keep it going, to keep the party going, because my alcoholism must be fed. It must be treated. Alcoholism will be treated one of two ways. It will be treated with substance, or it will be treated with Alcoholics Anonymous, recovery in God. And I didn't know that. And I'm stealing from my parents, and I hate myself, and I don't want to live, and I'm doing things like this to my little girl. Someone here is going to relate, and I'm going to share it because I heard a guy share it in a meeting, and it let me off the hook. My daughter's 5 years old. I get her on weekends. I'm living at my mom's house. Her mom drops her off on Friday at 6 o'clock. I'm not there, and that little girl sits in the window and waits for Daddy all night Friday and keeps telling Grandma, "Oh, no, he's going to come. He said he was going to come this week. He said we're going to the zoo." And she would wait till she got tired and fell asleep, and she'd stand and watch on Saturday, and she would keep running back to the window every time she heard a car door or any kind of a noise because Daddy's going to be there to take her to the zoo. And so finally on Sunday, sometime around 5 or 6 o'clock, I showed up tired, unkept, unslept, to ask Grandma for a couple dollars for that guilt Happy Meal so we could sit in McDonald's and I could tell that same story to her again and we could both believe it. Week after week after week after week. And if you live like that long enough, hurting your mother, your father, hurting your own kids, checking out seems to be the right thing to do. The doctor's opinion talks about men making the supreme sacrifice rather than continue the fight, and I want to die. My friend lives in Los Angeles, invites me to L.A. My thinking is if I can get to Los Angeles, I'll get away from alcohol and drugs forever. Great plan. I'll tell you also why I left. I left because I'm a coward and I'm a loser. I left because the girl I was dating was pregnant, and I'm a runner, and I left her there when she needed me the most. And I moved to L.A., and it got really bad, and I went to go see her, and I saw that baby, and I thought, I got to man up and straighten up. I got a son now, and this is what I've always wanted. And I moved her to Los Angeles, and we got really, really sick together. And we live in a rented bedroom. We can't pay the bills, and our kid wears T-shirts instead of diapers, and he doesn't eat a lot, and he's hungry a lot. It's bad. And I wasn't raised like that. And I got arrested in 91, and that was my start to Alcoholics Anonymous. So I was in a diversion program in California. You go to these meetings, you go 6 months, and then they drop the case. Little problem with the diversion program. They have a test that I can't pass. It's been a problem for me my entire life. It's called urinalysis. And I don't know how to fool it. I've been to a lot of meetings, and I heard a common line in the meetings. The line was this: just don't drink no matter what. You hear that in meetings. Just don't pick up no matter what. It sounds nice, but the problem with that is I drink no matter what. Telling a guy like me don't drink no matter what is like telling somebody with really bad diarrhea, wear white and don't go. Not going to work. The book says, for reasons yet obscure, the alcoholic is unable at certain times to bring into his consciousness with sufficient force the suffering and humiliation of even a month ago, that I'm without defense against the first drink, that I've lost the power of choice. This is the baffling future of alcoholism as we know it, the utter inability to leave it alone. I have a mind that I have a body that mustn't have alcohol, and I have a mind that won't let me not have it, and I'm screwed. And I don't know that. And I tried 4 days of that no matter what stuff, and I ended up in a mental ward, 5150'd. And somebody's been there. Yeah. And my life changed. And it changed because you came. Changed because I was in that hospital, and made me go to this meeting. It was a meeting that we had to go to, mandatory, and a guy came in, and he was a man of service. He was a guy that understood the steps and traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous, and he understood the principle of service. And he knew service was a requirement for recovery. And he came in that night. He took time away from his busy life and his full schedule and the ball game and his work and his kids. And he came in to share what had been so freely given to him. And I didn't want to hear him. I knew his crappy story anyway. I know this story. He was a wino on Skid Row. He peed on himself. And then he walked through that door and he put the plug in the jug. And today him and Bill Gates are running Microsoft, right? It's the same story every time. But that's not what he said. He said he had an illness called alcoholism that left him different, separate, lonely, and apart. That he had a hole in his soul that he couldn't fill with anything he could touch or see, that it was an inside job, that all his life he was pathetic, that he was a loser, that he couldn't be a good friend to anybody, that he was a horrible son, that he was a miserable father. And I went, oh my God, he knows. And he talked about stuff I never drank, and I wasn't putting up the defenses, I'm listening. Then he talked about becoming an accountant, and he was going to college, and he was a member of Alcoholics Anonymous 5 years, and then he nailed me. He talked about his daughter and the things he did on the weekends with her, and I fell apart, because I can't live with that one. At that point in my life, I can't see you with your kids. It's a stark revelation of what I am, and I can't take it. And I got some hope from that little guy, and I asked him what to do. The voice in my head said, Chuck, this guy's just like you. Maybe if you do whatever he's doing, you'd get sober. And I started going to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous regularly. In 1991, I went to meetings twice a day, three times a day, and I'm here to tell you that meeting makers don't make it. Meeting makers stay here long enough to get really sick, harm other people, and drink again. For me, that's my experience. I went to meetings every day. I read your book. I read through it. It's Here Lies a Hampshire Grenadier. It's Shakespeare. We're not going to read that crap. I didn't get a sponsor. I didn't work any steps. I didn't get any service. I'm not going to be here very long. I don't like being told what to do. Enjoying the fruits and benefits of step, none. And enjoying a lovely place called Shadriety. And I start developing mental illness, like becoming dry polar when I'm like that, you know. I 6 months into that, I picked up a drink. My friend Louis says it best. He says, no steps, no sponsor, no service, no chance. And I didn't know. And 6 months, 7 days sober, I picked up a drink, and I wasn't where I left off. I was horribly worse. And I spent the next 2 years going to Alcoholics Anonymous meetings loaded and staying loaded and getting a few days. And I did not come in and out of AA. I used to say that. I did not come in and out of AA. Alcoholics Anonymous members do more than sit in a seat. Alcoholics Anonymous members, they do take steps and help others. They do the things we're supposed to do here to get out of self and to get recovered. And I wasn't doing any of those. I was a bystander. I was a guy watching the parade go by. But I went to meetings. And I don't know why, but on June the 14th of 1993, I woke up from a run that wasn't the worst one. It just was the run that drank away the debate. It was the run that, I don't know why, I felt like I was dying and I couldn't stop it and I was scared. And it was the run that something clicked in me. It came clear that the thing I love the most, that I enjoy the most, that allows me to live in the world with you, which is getting hot loaded and drinking, isn't working. I'm taking stuff and I'm crying uncontrollably and I hate myself even more and I can't stand when I'm not on it. And the book talks about the jumping off place. And when alcoholics not, when you hate abstinence and you can't stand getting loaded, AA starts looking real good. And I begged a guy I didn't believe in for help that day. And I ended up on the phone with a little Jewish guy named Art Miller, God rest his soul. And Art came to get me and he told me I was an alcoholic of the hopeless variety. I know we don't like to pronounce people, but he pronounced me. He said, you're an alcoholic of the hopeless variety. You're going to die an alcoholic death. And I said, what do you mean? He said, you're going to die choking on your own vomit or your own blood, or you'll die with a spike in your arm in some car. And when you finally do die, kid, the people that you loved and respected your whole life will be relieved that you're finally gone. And I thought, I'm having a bad day, Art. Do you have to spring this on me? You know. I said, I've been watching. You got a really bad attitude, and something's going to have to change. And he was right. And I don't know where it came from, but from some place came something called willingness, and I did not manufacture the willingness. It was a gift. And I started doing whatever that little Jewish guy told me to do. And I got commitments, and I got busy in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I got involved in H&I, and I was doing panels and secretary meetings and doing the things that we do around here. And he took me through the 12x12, which he called it the step book. I don't call it the step book. I call it a series of essays that were written after the big book, which is the actual work. And I did what he told me to do, and he was a great man, and he saved my life, and he was a loving guy, and he gave me what he had. But I'll tell you what happened to me at 5 years sober. I'm on the phone conning people for large sums of money. I'm a scam artist. I'm ripping people off, and I'm okay with it because I'm a sober today, and I'm a winner, and you're a winner. And But after a while, that little song and dance gets a little bit old, and I can't live with myself, and I find myself going to meetings, and I can't hear because I'm judging you because I can't stand me. And I'm sitting home, and I'm feeling horrible about myself. And if you're doing things that are immoral in AA, it starts to wear on you. I know the feeling of the dark abyss that Chuck C. used to talk about, of what I am and who you think I am. And it gets to a point where I'm waking up in the mornings and I ain't doing meditation and I ain't praying. I'm looking at the pistol in the drawer and going, God, help me, grant me the courage to pull the trigger in this crap. Because I know I can't drink. My feet are trained in AA, I can't drink, but I don't know how to live and there's something wrong with me. Alcoholism, and I didn't really put my finger on it. I was really desperate, and I was working in Las Vegas, and I heard a guy speak at a meeting like this. His name is Bob D. He's sponsored by the Grand Poobah. this is being taped, right? Bob talked about what I suffer from. I heard him, and I went looking for him, and I followed him around, and I asked him to sponsor me, and he started taking me through the steps. And we did a real four-step. I did a real four-step where I could see... I had problems with my father for years, and I finally, through the inventory process, was able to see how my father was like me. I was able to see how, in a state of being afraid and loving his only kid, I thought he'd abused me, and he hadn't. It was a lie. My father cared a lot, and sometimes he was a little hard on me because his brothers were drunks, and they weren't out of prisons and institutions. He thought if he disciplined me, I wouldn't be like that. And he loved me enough to try. And he was a better father than I'd ever been. I started having a different relationship with people around me. I started doing 6 and 7 on this business I'm in because I ain't done with it. I'm still doing it. And I keep asking God for help and asking God to remove the defects, and I'm not closing deals. It's getting worse and worse, and I won't let go, and I go broke, and I'm borrowing from people. And I keep asking for the defect to be removed. One day the FBI comes in, and the defect's removed. That's what happens. I keep asking. My job is to ask. It's God's job to deliver. I started making amends, which I pushed a lot of them under the rug. And one of them was with my daughter. I hadn't seen her in years, and she didn't want to talk to me. And I didn't know where she was at. My mother calls me to tell me that she had a baby boy, and I call Bob to complain about how she ruined my vanity because I'm a grandfather at 37, and it's bad. What if I want to date some young girl? And, you know, just crazy stuff, and I'm with a girl anyway. I'm nuts. Anyway, so I call Bob up to whine, and he says, oh, you have a phone number. And I said, well, I don't have the number. He goes, I want you to get it and call her. And I said, Bob, I can't do that. He goes, get the number and call me back. I call her, get the number, call him back, and he tells him what to do. And I said, Bob, I can't do it. It's going to harm her. He said, Chuck, are you going to trust God today, or are you going to play God? So I did what I was told, and the result was I ended up with my daughter telling me, Daddy, I miss you a lot, I love you, and I'm sorry that we haven't had time together. And I started having a relationship with her and her son and her boyfriend, and, Alcoholics Anonymous has repaired things that I had never thought of. The relationships in work and with family and friends, and it's just been amazing, the ride here. I didn't bargain for any of that. I got active with a home group, started sponsoring guys. We started a new group, and it's the blight of my life. This is what I love to do. I live in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I visit the world. That's the truth for me. That's my deal. I love what I do, and I'm connected to you. If you're new tonight, I want to share something with you, because we have promises in AA. We have the 12-step promises. We have the 9-step promises, and the book is filled with promises. But I'm going to read the 12-step promises, because I think they're very vital, and we don't hear about them a lot. And on page 100, it says here, both you and the new man must walk day by day in the path of spiritual progress. If you persist, remarkable things will happen. When we look back, we realize the things which came to us when we put ourselves in God's hands were better than anything we could have planned. Follow the dictates of a higher power, and you will presently live in a new, wonderful world, no matter what your present circumstances are. And that is a promise. I'm going to tell you a quick story about that, because when I was new, I didn't know what to expect here. I had no clue. And if you have wishes and desires, I hope they come true, but they're going to be much bigger. That's my experience. But I'm going to share a little story with you that I heard, and this is not a religious story, even though we're in a religious facility. It's non-denominational. It's just a cute story. We don't have any opinion on religion here in Alcoholics Anonymous. But it's a story of three oak trees. They're growing up in a forest, and they're talking one day like oak trees do. And one says to the other, what do you want to be when you grow up? He says, that's easy for me. I want to be a castle home to a great king. How about you? He goes, oh, easy for me. I want to be a great ship. I want to sail all over the world. I want to see faraway lands and haul fine merchandise and cargo. How about you? To the third one, he goes, oh, that's easy. I want to be a cathedral. I want to be a great church, someplace where people can come and find God and find salvation. And they all grow up, and they're split up and divided, and they never see each other. And the one that wants to be a great castle is cut up into scrap wood, and he's put on the floor of this little shed thing that they called a manger. And some say that a great king was in fact born there. And the one that wanted to be a great ship was cut up into planks, and they made little fishing boats out of them. And this little carpenter guy sailed across this sea called Galilee with something called the gospel. And the one that wanted to be a great church or a cathedral was cut into planks. They took two pieces of wood and they nailed them together and they called this thing a cross. And they drug this guy through a town and they flogged him and killed him and hung him on that cross. And some say the world that he died and was risen from the dead, so the world would find salvation. And the moral to the story is this: no matter how great and how grand my plans are, God's have always been greater. If you're new tonight, I invite you to stay here in Alcoholics Anonymous, get a sponsor, take these actions, help others, and allow this to take place. The things that have happened in my life, the things that guide me, are the things that you teach me. My God talks through you. My God, I watch him by the things I watch that people do in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm eternally grateful. Thank you for letting me share.